All right, we're here in San Francisco. I'm Tiago and this is Oz. And we have Tyler and Brian from CloudBees here to talk to us about Jenkins and specifically scaling Jenkins on Azure.
Hello. Hello, guys.
You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah. So my name is Brian Dawson. I'm a DevOps evangelist with CloudBees, which means I take sort of the years I have spent sort of enabling teams to optimize their software development processes, which now sort of become DevOps, and I enable the community as well as our customers, sort of the software development community and our customers to achieve DevOps.
I like that subtle, I was DevOps before it was cool.
Yes, yeah, hey, yeah.
So I'm R. Tyler Croy, that's how you can find me on the internet. My job title when I joined CloudBees was Jenkins Evangelist, right. But I've been in the Jenkins community for about the past 7.5 years. So my business title, my business card says Community Concierge, because most of my day-to-day activities are focused on making sure that the Jenkins open source project is successful and is growing, right. And has some support.
I've known Jenkins in the past as being like a continuous integration tool. Mm-hmm. How would you define it? I might be.
It's more than that.
Yeah.
And one of the, I would say, most important features of Jenkins is that it's extendable. Right. So it's been grown in just about any given direction to where people have found a need for it. Yeah. So we stopped calling ourselves as a community a continuous integration server a year or two ago and just started referring to Jenkins as an automation server. So where people were traditionally using Jenkins for building and testing of software, we started to see more and more people using it to not only build and test their software, but to run acceptance test harnesses and, to do their deploys to staging, deploys to production, and really sort of enumerating the full software development pipeline inside of Jenkins. Automation server.
And I would sort of tie that together as our DevOps evangelist, right? If you sort of look at sort of the idea of it, of DevOps, sort of oversimplifying, not to start any wars here, but development and operations working together to deliver better software faster, effectively. Continuous delivery sort of being the how of DevOps, in my opinion, right? There's the set of practices that you can use to sort of manifest those principles of DevOps. Well, as an automation engine that connects to a rich ecosystem that includes things from issue tracking tools to the most popular source code management tools to test tools to deployment solutions, what's really happened is Jenkins has become the hub of that continuous delivery and, some would say a DevOps enabling tool.
Right. Cool. And the topic that we have today is on Jenkins on Azure, or scaling it at least. And why do you think that this is important for people to be aware of, is being able to scale Jenkins?
Do you want me to take this?
Yeah, why don't you? Yeah.
So, one of the things that's really, I'd say, cool about Jenkins is you've always been able to download it. Kosuke, who founded the project, always packaged up a .war file, which if you had the Java runtime, you could run Jenkins on your machine. And so developers that have needed something like Jenkins for the past almost 10 years have downloaded Jenkins.war and run it on a workstation under their desks. Yeah. And as time sort of went on, Jenkins became more and more integral to the delivery of software for that person or that person's team, to where you sort of reach this point where you need more from Jenkins. And it's not that the software isn't enough, it's the workstation under your machine can't support 100 engineers or 200 engineers. So you've got to start to bring something to the table like Azure or an Elastic Compute Cloud to really blow up Jenkins and give you more capacity to build and ship those different pieces of software that you might be plumbing into Jenkins.
Yeah, and I would add to that also sort of going back where we talk about it becoming a core automation engine, whether you're using it for CI or CD, these sort of shadow toolings or shadow IT, shadow servers that have popped up under people's desks have become mission critical. And for a business that is relying on software to compete, it's not wise to have mission critical components of that delivery pipeline sort of living out in the wild.
Right.
so One of the things you need to be able to do is sort of get control of that. And why do you do that? You do that, you know, not only just for the sake of having control, but as you scale these practices across the organization, you want to make it easy for other teams to adopt practices that have been proven by sort of those early adopters. Mm-hmm. And when you do it, you want to be able to share the best practices that were learned. And meanwhile, you want to enforce sort of company security guidelines, right, retention of IP, etc. Now, there's an interesting thing, though, that while you do this, you have to sort of ensure that you give those original adopters as well as new adopters the flexibility to set up a purpose-built implementation of Jenkins or implementation of any tooling, so it could support that team's needs.
Yeah,
it's like I've seen it in companies that I've worked with in the past. There's like this constant tug of war between like, I want the freedom to do what I want to do to ship this product, and then corporate IT has requirements to keep things locked down, to keep things secure, to make sure we're not spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on, you know, compute capacity and things like that. And the thing that's interesting to me about Jenkins in this regard is we can have a little bit of both, but it takes some thoughtfulness to get there.
Yeah, and one thing I was thinking about is the time and time again we see Azure and other cloud computing being used for high availability and being able to you know, scale out and have multiple instances of things. And at the same time, you have the telemetry and the reporting to know when you can scale down as well.
Right.
And that's something that we'd like to see how we would implement, you know, scaling Jenkins.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you think about any sort of software organization or a group that's building software, people aren't 24/7.
Right.
And so in, you know, the olden days when you had a team that was responsible for release engineering, they had a build lab or a test lab that was online all of the time. Mm. And that's unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like once people are no longer committing code, you no longer need to run machines to build and test and deploy that code. So using something like Azure to where you can scale down the capacity for something like Jenkins is pretty useful, I think.
Cool. Yeah, and I also just want to throw in real quick, I also think where we talk about sort of balancing, I guess, what I'll call corporate governance or enterprise needs and sort of developer team freedom, the idea of having a solution, a cloud platform or solution like Azure to sort of take that step towards scaling Jenkins sort of helps strike that balance, right?
Right.
Because we have an infrastructure which we can grow and scale, we can query and report on, and sort of enforce some of the needs of the IT organization, but then sort of treating that as a platform, as a service through which we can give quick access to standardized implementation of Jenkins. So I'd say Azure, in a sense, helps provide that balance of freedom and control.
Yeah. It complements it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So I guess I'm really interested to see in how you would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the rubber meets the road.
I guess that falls on me, huh?
Yeah.
So we already sort of went through some of the, I would say, the benefits of cloud computing in general. From my perspective, the defining factor for cloud computing or why Jenkins plus, you know, cloud trademark is important is to have an API to get infrastructure. The specific implementation from the Jenkins perspective isn't as important, so long as you have an API to create and destroy infrastructure to run Jenkins with.
Right.
So the first sort of aspect of that's really interesting to me is Jenkins and Docker. And CloudBees spent a lot of effort in 2015 to improve the way that Jenkins works with Docker. For a number of reasons, I think Docker has a lot of really promising features that it brings to the table, especially when you talk about, to Brian's point, about sort of enabling freedom for developer teams as well as having some control over infrastructure that's being used. But we've got a lot of different ways that we can integrate with Docker that I'll sort of go through. Like the easiest one, from my perspective, is running the Jenkins master in a container.
Right.
I had mentioned that you can grab jenkins.war if you've got Java and just run that locally. We also package up and distribute an official Jenkins Docker container So you can just do docker pull Jenkins and you'll have a Jenkins image.
And this running. Is the official image, right?
This is the official one. Which is, this is following, so the Jenkins project has two sort of release lines. There's the weekly release line where most of the features will go into. And then we have what's called the LTS, or long-term support release line. The Docker image is actually defaulted to the long-term support one. So we rev it with security and stability fixes and then bring new features in once every 3 months. So I think for that reason, it's also a really good starting point. And then running a Jenkins master in a Docker container is fairly easy. You could, this does look a little gnarly just because it's some shell syntax to get onto one screen. But the two sort of really important things here is mapping this port 8080. Jenkins runs a web server, so it's going to be listening on port 8080. Mapping that back out to the host, because if you don't, then you'll never get to see Jenkins. But the other interesting thing that this command is doing, which I try to recommend to people who start out with Docker and containerized masters, is it maps the Jenkins home, so the place on the file system where Jenkins is sourcing its data from,
right,
out to your host machine as well. If you don't do this, when you destroy the Docker container, the Jenkins data goes away, which could be what you're going for. But generally, it's nice to have that available in case you want to run a new container or move it over to a different machine. This, from my perspective, is a pro. Like, you can move a Jenkins master around fairly easily using Jenkins inside of a Docker container.
Right.
It does require a Linux master node, which is super easy to spin up on any sort of infrastructure as a service tool. But the downside is you also have to be running like a Linux machine, and if you're coming from a Windows background or a BSD or some other different type of Unix background, Docker does present some portability architecturally speaking constraints. There's also the fact that you're mapping data in and out of a container can be a performance penalty.
Yeah.
So I don't have hard numbers on this. But one of the biggest bottlenecks that we see in the Jenkins community for people that are scaling up a Jenkins master is the amount of processor time available to the master, because it's receiving all of these reports, it's receiving all the data from the different builds, and then I/O for the disks.
Right.
So flushing all of that to disk is probably, once you scale up a Jenkins master, the biggest bottleneck is writing data to disk. And so running a Docker container for your master can present some challenges there. The other aspect, which we'll get to in a little bit later, that Docker gives us some flexibility on is running the build nodes themselves.
Yep.
But I'll touch on that in a little bit later. So, right, Jenkins on the cloud, that's really what I wanted to talk about, right? In the very, very sort of broad catalog of plugins, we've got the Azure plugin. Mm-hmm. We've got a whole bunch of other plugins for just about any kind of thing that you might want to do with Jenkins.
Yeah.
The Azure plugin presents this really interesting use case, and it extends one of our extensions points called a cloud extension point, which basically says, plug in what an Azure virtual machine should look like. Give it some labels. And in this screenshot, I'm just creating an Ubuntu machine, which is going to be my sort of machine template.
Right.
And when I save this, the Azure plugin is going to spin up machines on demand, which if you come from a racking machines to run as build nodes sort of environment, this is a huge departure from that and simplifies things quite a bit.
And this will use it to create nodes inside an Ubuntu machine, and does it create more machines as needed?
Mm-hmm. Cool. So one of the really nice things about the Azure plugin and others like it is there's this notion of a retention time. So you can set a cap. You can say, don't spin up more than 10 machines, or don't spin up more than 100 machines.
Right.
I mean, I'm not made of money. Don't just kill my kill my Azure account, right? But you can also say, keep a machine online for a certain amount of time. So if you run through, to what I was saying earlier, where people start leaving work, if everybody leaves work and in 30 minutes or an hour there's no work to do, the Azure plugin will shut down those machines.
Right.
but you want to keep them online a little bit because there's overhead to spinning up a new machine.
Just in case someone kicks off a late build or something.
Right. And the plugin allows you to define that. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting about the Azure plugin to me is it's not just one type of template. You don't have one sort of type of machine that you can spin up. This is an example, but you can define multiple templates to where you might have Ubuntu 14.04 specific needs. You might have you know, Windows specific needs. You might have Red Hat Enterprise Linux specific needs. You can define a template for each of those. Right. And then the Azure plugin can spin up different pools of machines with different capabilities on top of Azure to meet those.
And then the master knows which ones to send the builds to depending on the needs.
Yeah. Cool. And then when you actually go to configure your job, and if I jump back real quick, I gave this machine template a couple labels. In your job, you can restrict where this build should be running. And in this case, I'm restricting it to a machine that's got the Docker label.
Right.
And when I took this screenshot, there are four nodes that were already spun up and running to that had that label. But if there weren't any, the Azure plugin would be looking for a machine template that was configured with the Docker label, spin a machine up of that, and then the master would queue a build on that specific node. And to me, this gives me a whole lot of flexibility to where instead of saying, in ye olden days before we had labels, you would say, run it on this machine specifically. And I had to know about where my machines were and what they were. Now I can just say, run it on a machine that's got Docker. That's all I need. Yeah.
And you can just set labels for like SSD machines, large machines, so it gives you the flexibility.
Right.
Some team maybe they're paying a lot of money and they can use SSDs, but the other team, they're just testing things and you can just say, okay, use A series, not D.
One of the things I really like about using descriptive labels like that is there is no, even if you say all of our machines need to have Docker, there's different types of needs that you're going to have across these different machines or different projects that you're going to be building and testing and deploying. If I need something that I know is going to be running in the course of its build, say five or six different services or five or six different applications, I want to provision something that's got a lot of CPU capacity. Right. So I might add a high CPU label or a multi-CPU label so that has the appropriate resources allocated for it. Whereas if I'm just building a static site, I just need any old machine, right? It doesn't matter. So expressive labels actually really, that's sort of a, I would say a best practice that isn't really, the Azure plugin is not going to make you do that, but that'll help you sort of scale up in different, where you need it across something like Azure.
Cool.
So the other really cool plugin from my perspective that.
Did you build it?
I did not build it.
It is just cool. It is really cool.
So I mentioned that the Azure plugin extends this cloud extension point inside of Jenkins, and that's really the zen of Jenkins is these extension points. The Docker plugin does as well.
Right.
So where the Azure plugin is, connecting to a cloud API on, some azure.com URL and provisioning machines, the Docker plugin is just talking to the Docker daemon and saying, give me a container.
Right.
And what I think is especially neat, it's not necessarily the Docker plugin's design, but Docker itself was implemented with this client-server design. Mm. So a local Docker daemon running on one Linux host looks effectively the same as a Docker daemon that's been bound to a TCP port on a remote host, which also looks the same as a Docker Swarm cluster, which has a whole lot of hosts behind it. And from the Docker plugin standpoint, it's just an API.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter how much capacity you have behind it. Mm. If you can bring the capacity, the Docker plugin will definitely provision containers on it.
Cool.
Yeah, one example we have on this, we have this service called Azure Container Service, which is in public preview. Mm. It's basically a Docker Swarm or Mesos cluster running on Azure. So good thing is, we hear this from customers, okay, I keep everything on premises, and my team doesn't have time to learn about Azure.
Right.
Using things like this, like Azure Container Service, you don't have to know about Azure at all because it gives you a Docker Swarm endpoint or Mesosphere endpoint, DCOS endpoint. And for example, for Jenkins, you can just show this endpoint to Jenkins and start using it.
And as far as Jenkins is concerned, it's not Azure, it's Docker Swarm, right?
And
In an enterprise, you might even have different teams maintaining the Azure account and subscriptions and scale and create the Docker Swarm endpoint and then hand it over to the continuous delivery or the Jenkins team.
And it's nothing proprietary about Microsoft. It's all about Docker and Mesosphere and Marathon. So the good thing is if you're not happy with it, if you want to move this thing to another place or even on premises, it's just Docker containers. You don't have to do anything, you're not locked in. And what I like also is we are working with Docker and Mesosphere. So it's not Microsoft is doing this thing.
Right.
Docker
right.
says, okay, this is the best practice.
Right.
This is how you guys need to implement this. And we say, okay, that's good. Let us do this in Azure. So instead of trying to learn about documentation, you know, learning best practices about Docker or Mesosphere, it's just there. Just deploy it and start using it.
Yeah. The cool thing that I like about that approach, and this isn't a knock against Azure, but if I've got specific build needs or if I've got something that has to go into my job, if I can create a Docker container, that's really, really easy for me as a developer to test and evaluate and to sort of develop alongside anything else, as opposed to trying to provision a machine specifically for Azure. If I've got Docker as a capability, then I can verify that my build environment is consistent across everyone in the team, and I can use that same Docker container up on the Jenkins install using the Azure Container Service endpoint. Mm-hmm. Just saying, here's where you get my image from the registry, and just go with it, which is really cool.
And it makes everyone happy. The developers, they don't want to know about it's Azure on premises, whatever. They just want to run it.
Right.
Mm. The IT operations, they don't want to learn about developers, very deep ideas about running things. Right. They just want to make sure that this thing is secure, performant, and compliant with the company standards. Right. So it's a win-win.
And taking it back to sort of our earlier conversation, at risk of sounding cliche, this really is another, a real sort of technically based example of governance, but still providing flexibility, right? And I'd also say another thing that we talked about with scale is the ability to, allow sort of the innovative teams or forward-thinking teams to experiment, learn, and then share those best practices out. Containers are a manifestation of that. So your example of proving out your build environment within a container, sort of stabilizing it, and then you can bake that out and share it, or not bake it out and share it, but publish it and share it.
So a very quick demonstration about Azure Container Service. So this is my Azure account. I just use an ARM template, what we call Azure Resource Manager template. It makes things easier. So normally, on the right side, you can see that I have a ARM template which creates a Docker Swarm cluster, and it's 574 lines. But if you're using the container service, it makes your job easier because now it's just 135 lines. Okay, of course, the number of lines is not a super good sign, but basically, you don't have to care about how networking is going to be created, how storages are going to be created. The service just takes care of all of it and gives you the endpoint. Okay, here's your endpoint, SSH into it, or just start using it.
Right.
And here's my resource group. So I have a master node for Docker Swarm and three agents. You can see here I have all of these are, of course, behind load balancers. So you can just see here. Come on, Azure. So it's flexible. If you want to do things, you can just go ahead and start doing things. And as being not a Jenkins master like these, our guests, I just tried a very simple build. So I have this super complex project. The name is Super Complex Project. And let me build now. So you can see here now, it says pending, and it's waiting for the next available executor. Actually, this is now connecting to my Azure Container Service Docker Swarm cluster, and it is going to create a Docker container and run this build on that container. Let me continually go Docker PS. Oh, let me just export my Docker host. You can see that 37 seconds ago, the Jenkins slave container is just started up. And this slave is running this build. And when the build is completed, Jenkins will just ask the Docker Swarm cluster running on ACS, hey, I'm done. Just stop this container and remove it. So I'm not paying for anything. Yeah.
So, and to configure it, you used the AC, so you created the ACS account, and then it gave the endpoint to the Docker, to the Jenkins Docker plugin.
Let me show you like this. It's just a ARM template, so you can just go to Quick Start Templates on Azure.
Right. To create the
environment. And we have two templates. One is for Docker Swarm, the other for Mesos. Here, if I go to the Swarm one, all I have to do is click on this fancy Deploy to Azure button. And of course, I'm going to provide some values like how many masters I want, how many agents I want, what's the name of the cluster, etc. And after this is created, if I go to Jenkins settings, and it's 5 o'clock. it's not something Azure Container Services do. So manage my Jenkins. What I basically do is I add a cloud, Docker cloud.
Right.
And I use my ACS IP as a Docker URL. That's it.
Right.
It uses the Docker plugin. So again, very cool plugin.
All right. And do you have one example set up for us as well?
I have an example set up in a different direction.
Great.
So one of the things that I will usually tell people is there's some pros and cons to using these build nodes that are in containers. Mm-hmm. So in OZ as an example, there is a container coming up. And then there is a Java build agent coming up inside of that container and connecting back to the Jenkins.
Right.
And you don't have any control as a developer over what image or what image ID was provisioned in that Jenkins setup. The Jenkins administrator does, which can be what you want.
Yeah,
you might want to restrict the types of containers that are being used.
Right.
But the problem with that is if you're trying to go with sort of maximal flexibility for the developer teams, they lose the ability to specify which containers they want to use in that environment, unless you're giving everybody Jenkins administrator access, which might not be the best idea. Additionally, if you've got sort of Docker inside of Docker build workloads, so let's say you're building out containers, like you've created your build environment, ostensibly you would have a Jenkins job somewhere which reads from your source tree and builds your Docker containers. Trying to run Docker inside of a Docker container is doable. I've done it. It's not the easiest. It's not the most user-friendly. So there are some downsides if you choose to use that. I actually found how they implemented running Docker inside of Docker to be really interesting from an academic standpoint. I'm not sure that I would want to run and rely, with my build pipeline on top of that.
Right.
So the stuff that I generally will do is I'll run Jenkins with the Azure plugin for some build workloads, and then something like the Docker plugin for other build workloads.
Right.
But the demo that I wanted to show you today, I'm just using the Azure plugin to spin up machines that have Docker running on them.
Yeah.
And the reason that I wanted the Docker to use Docker is to give the developer teams the option to specify, what containers they want to run for their builds. And with Azure spinning up an Ubuntu machine, which has Docker pre-installed, we're good to go, and people can specify whatever they want.
Right.
And the other plugin, I'm getting lost in P word soup. The other plugin that I really wanted to talk about today is a pipeline plugin, which is something that we've been improving dramatically over the last 12 months in the Jenkins community. And this combined with this sort of elastic compute capacity with the Azure plugin and with Docker, I think gives a developer team, or really any team that needs to define a pipeline, so that software delivery pipeline, the most amount of flexibility and power over what's actually going to happen. So instead of saying, everybody go to the Jenkins web UI and configure your jobs individually, we can now check what's called a Jenkins file directly into source control. That can reference things like nodes or Docker images, and that's how I can define my build instead of relying on something created in a web UI, you know, 6 months ago that someone has now forgotten what those settings were.
And Tyler, I noticed you said you corrected yourself. You said that'll enable developers to do things. Would you say that this concept of the pipeline plugin and a Jenkins file with multi-branch enables people from other departments to participate in the CD pipeline definition?
The most places that I've used the pipeline plugin is for deploying the Jenkins project's own infrastructure.
Okay.
So I've been using it much more, I would say, as a systems administrator.
Right, okay, which is an example, right.
The deployment side of a build and test pipeline.
Okay.
But the nice thing about it, from my perspective, is because it's checked into source control, there's like the history of what's been done and why, just like any other piece of code, is there, so anyone new to the team or a different part of the team can come in and make a change that needs to happen.
Yeah, then you get all the usual infrastructure as code benefits.
Software development.
Same configuration across multiple environments.
So this was the most concise Jenkins file that I could find to share
fit
with
it
you.
Into one slide.
I wanted to fit it in, you know, and still have it large enough to where I could point out some things. So this is actually there's a couple important things going on in this Jenkins file. The Jenkins file itself is a Groovy-based domain-specific language, so you can use a lot of the normal Groovy syntax to implement this, and I'm using some of that here. But I've got a couple things that are going on here. One, I'm allocating a node, and in this case, I'm just saying with the Docker label. So whereas before, I had that checkbox that said restrict this to things with Docker, now I have that in code and checked in. So I'm specifying my system dependencies, which is good. Checkout SCM is just saying whatever source tree change triggered this job, just check that out onto this node when I allocate it. This is sort of unnecessary. This is sort of unnecessary to really go through, but I'm basically creating a little variable with some metadata that I need for my build. And in this particular pipeline, I'm building a Docker container, and I'm deploying it to the registry. And so this is why I also wanted to share this is a live Jenkins file. This is how this container in the Jenkins project is actually built and deployed to the Docker registry. And this is checked in and has commits on it, and I can go change it, and I can go submit a pull request and have things just work out nice like it's normal code.
So I guess Docker is a known.
So one of the I would say cool things about Jenkins's ethos is that everything should be extensible. So this Docker variable in scope is provided by another plugin. So there's the pipeline plugin, and there's the Docker pipeline plugin, which adds additional capabilities into the pipeline syntax.
Cool.
So this just gives us a Docker container image, and then that can be pushed. And those last two lines are really provided by another plugin. So as time goes on, what's really exciting about this for me as a community member is as plugin developers start to adopt the pipeline plugin and build more enhancements to it, the language for Jenkins files is only going to become more rich, which will be, it'll be nice.
Cool.
while I'm waxing poetic about the pipeline plugin, we also just as CloudBees open source the pipeline stage view plugin. And so one of the big problems we had before, if you were defining this sort of delivery pipeline in Jenkins, is you would be sort of chaining one job to another, and you had no representation of your delivery pipeline that you could show anybody, anybody in the organization. So the StageView plugin reads in that Jenkins file and actually presents you a live view of what the pipeline looks like and what the different stages are in that view.
Cool.
So yeah, scary demo time.
Everybody, fingers crossed.
Brace yourselves. So let me embiggen this a little bit. So this is a live Jenkins cluster that I have running on the Azure cloud right now.
But it says localhost.
So for my demos and for my own sanity, I try not to run Jenkins installations on the public internet unless I've spent time securing them. With the Jenkins 2.0 initiative, which we're currently working on, we're changing the defaults. So when you download Jenkins, it will, I would say, strongly encourage you to configure it to be secure out of the box. And that's sort of a big sea change from Jenkins historically. But that's coming in the next couple months. We actually just released 2.0 alpha, which we'll be blogging about next week after we record this.
So I see Microsoft there.
You do.
So you have this piping to your Azure Jenkins one on port 8080 via.
Yeah, this is just an SSH tunnel.
Okay.
So I wanted to make sure that it wasn't running on the public internet because I spent no time securing it, and I highly recommend that you do that as well, or spend the time securing it. It's actually, we've got some good resources on the wiki for the Jenkins project to do so. I just didn't bother with it.
Great.
So there's a couple of, I would say, interesting things to show off here. One, which most people, I would say, that haven't paid much attention to Jenkins in the past year is these different folders. This is provided by something called the CloudBees Folders plugin, which gives us a much better way of organizing.
How many plugins do you have?
We have 1,100 plus.
1,100
plus. So I actually broke these out into the different GitHub organizations that I was basing some of my demos off of. And what's really interesting about the 2.0 initiative is we have code coming into 2.0 which will take a GitHub organization, so you'd load up Jenkins, you'd say, here's where my GitHub organization is, and it will create this structure for you by default, looking for every repository and every branch in every repository that has a Jenkins file, to where if you start using Jenkins files, you drastically reduce the amount of stuff that you have to do in configuring your different builds.
It really is an automation tool.
We're automating the automation.
Automating the automation of the build.
We're slowly getting to the point to where I can just do Docker run Jenkins and things will just all
everything
happen.
Will happen. Jenkins will be a plugin.
So in these are some Azure open source projects that I had pulled down. The only one that I actually spent any time getting to work because I didn't really want to learn about every single Azure repository in existence is the one that I've used, which is the cross-platform. CLI, like I know the CLI, I know how to use it, so I wanted to have this built and tested. But I would say the more interesting stuff is under the Jenkins folder, which is where I built out some actual pipelines. So we've got an account application. This is a single stage pipeline. We actually don't do a deployment from Jenkins for this, so we just have one column.
That's building.
Just building, and then we're archiving the artifact. And if we had a, I would say, better test for this, I would show you some test reports.
Cool.
And then we've got some other things that failed because I didn't configure them correctly. I wanted this to be an authentic demo, so there had to be some red balls
as well.
This Hello World job is actually something that's, I would say, a bit more interesting in that I actually configured a full pipeline for this. The stuff that's actually happening in the pipeline is totally fake. But this is, I would say, more representative of an actual continuous delivery pipeline.
So it has basically one row per build run.
One row per build.
And then the columns are the stages.
The stages in that pipeline. Yeah. And what's particularly interesting about this to me is for the 7.5 years I've been in the Jenkins mm-hmm. community, I've never had something, I would say, so easy and clearly understandable to represent a build and deployment pipeline to people who aren't intimately familiar with that build and deployment pipeline. Mm-hmm. So this, I am more than happy to put up on a wall board somewhere that says, here's what's happening right now with this application.
And this, you know, I think this, again, sort of speaks to the, I guess I'd say, mainstreaming, the elevating of Jenkins as a CI/CD tool. You have other stakeholders outside of just the technical or development team, right? And this is a way, as Tyler said, that you can express what is going on with your delivery pipeline within Jenkins to your non-technical stakeholders, right?
The whole team can just keep track of this.
I never ever want to answer the question, what's in staging again? Like, if I can reduce the need to explain what is where in my deployment pipelines, that's already a win for me as a developer.
And if you don't mind me chiming in again real quick, Tyler. So you'll see Tyler went build, unit test, acceptance test, deploy to staging, which you can do reasonably continuously and automatically, right? In the real world. And in some of Tyler's actually real-world implementations, you may have a deploy stage at the end. But you know, oftentimes you're not going to even want to trust an automation engine such as Jenkins that has done validation prior to automatically deploy to, say, the production environment. Mm-hmm. Nice thing about pipeline is it has a feature that gives you the ability to pause between stages and request manual intervention. So to get approval, for instance, to deploy to production.
Cool. Yeah. For me, the really important part of that is just because I can deploy every single commit doesn't necessarily mean
I want to.
Or it's the right thing to do. Like, there's a number of organizational reasons why you might not want every single change to go all the way through to production. But to me, that still means, or that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to model the full extent of your pipeline in a tool like this. This is all fairly easy to set up, assuming, you know, this is just using the Azure plugin, this is using the pipeline plugin, pipeline stage view plugin, and then CloudBees folders plugin. But this is all, like, my community hat sort of necessitates that I try to focus as much on what's open source. So this is all using open source tools that are available right now for the Jenkins project, which is pretty cool. I got some stuff running on all of these differently provisioned provisioned machines, so we'll just let those go. And sort of, so I guess the demo worked.
That's good enough.
Go back to this. There's a couple other plugins that I didn't want to dive in too much. The one that I would like to mention is this Node.js plugin for the Azure cross-platform CLI, which is written in Node. Jenkins also has this feature, an extension point, of course, because everything is an extension point, called installers. So the Node.js plugin actually provides a Node installer. So my Docker images weren't actually containing Node. I had, as a Jenkins administrator, configured what versions of Node were available for my builds, and whatever machine got allocated that needed that for whatever job was running on it would have that installed automatically. And we've got installers for, you know, Java, a number of different open source tools. And to me, that's one of the less used but most, I would say, interesting and useful features that people don't know about. Which I don't know. To me, that's a really cool feature. Just having Jenkins automatically set up stuff for me. So I had mentioned the Docker thing, where, you know, you can have the Jenkins administrator configure what Docker images are using with the Docker Swarm cluster and things like that. There's other things that you can do that will help you scale a Jenkins cluster, and it's not always going to be about, you know, who gets access to what compute capacity is available. There's also Jenkins itself. Like, it's really easy to spin up 100 machines or, you know, whatever your API limits on Azure will allow you to spin up, or how much capacity you have in your Swarm cluster. But at the end of the day, there's still that Jenkins master running. And this is something that we have struggled with for the project in the past. Like, the Jenkins master is the only thing that has to be vertically scaled right now. But this year we're starting, I would say, a concerted effort to address that, to where a single Jenkins conceptual master isn't just locked to one specific machine. Is really, if you don't have really fast disks, it doesn't matter if your build succeeded or not, or I've got, you know, that pipeline's complete if I can't write the results, right? Yeah. But what this means for us scaling right now, you know, we can scale out those build nodes. We've got some tools for that with Docker and Azure. But you sort of have to organizationally scale a little bit around Jenkins as well. And so one sort of common best practice for that is scaling around different parts of the organization, so there's not just sort of one big monster Uber Jenkins master running around, because you can only buy hardware that's so big, yeah. Right? Yeah. But you sort of tailor it around different teams. So instead of saying, you know, the dev and the ops team, which is a bad split.
Which I see, though.
Teams, yeah. Teams like, these are the teams that are delivering mobile applications, which is, you know, from a concept standpoint, a software delivery organization. So they're, you know, yeah. Who's going to be working together to deliver that software?
Or even the feature teams inside one of those.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a side effect, I would say a side benefit for a Jenkins master with this, or Jenkins administrator, with this, in that you sort of segregate the plugins that you need to install. So if you're building .NET applications, there's no reason for there to be Android plugins installed in your Jenkins master. And from a management standpoint, separating these out in sort of different concerns separates out the plugin load, which also reduces the risk of, you know, someone using the wrong resources or one plugin destabilizing or breaking something or conflicting with another plugin. Yeah. So it gives you a little bit of I would say, administration scalability as well. And of course, I mean, if you've got something like Azure, just put as much as you can onto the build. Like, if you've got a thing, an API where you can say, give me more compute, okay. Put as much into that as you can.
Don't forget to turn them off.
Right. Yeah. Don't forget to turn them off, though. I mean, if you don't have to pay the bill.
Oh, yeah.
And then I... So speaking of paying the bills, I actually
nice segue.
Yeah, I actually did want to mention this. I know I do wear my community hat, but just this week, CloudBees announced actually you can speak to this because you're more appropriate to speak to scaling with Jenkins Master.
You're going to retain your community integrity and hand it off to me. Yeah. So just this week, actually, just Tuesday. CloudBees launched what really is the first and only Jenkins-based continuous delivery as a service platform. So basically, we've leveraged Docker containers, Mesos, running on some cloud technologies to enable people to deploy Jenkins as a service and thereby CD as a service on their own private cloud or virtual private cloud. So this is really bringing to market in a product that runs on the cloud, running Jenkins at scale. Mm-hmm. Jenkins at scale, excuse me.
Which, from a Jenkins community standpoint, what's really interesting to me about this is there's larger companies, there's larger customers of CloudBees, which they don't want open source Jenkins. They don't want the stuff that we're working on. They want Jenkins sort of plus all of this other stuff.
Right.
And this to me packages up what I see people coming to the mailing lists or conferences asking me about, saying, well, how do I run Jenkins for all of these different teams? I've got my mobile apps team, I've got my, you know, .NET apps team. How do I manage all of these Jenkins that are running around? And now I can point them at something and say,
yeah.
Boy, howdy, do I have the product for you?
Well, I tell you, I like to say that, so prior to coming to CloudBees, I would help, you know, large companies define a CD process and pipeline, and that would usually be supported or backed with Jenkins. One of the things we did for a large European federal institution was basically do what we call a build your own Jenkins as a service. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the value was huge. It saved them significant amount of money, amounts of money. It helped accelerate the adoption of continuous delivery across the organization. But it was still, you know, sort of managing the VM, spinning up, spinning them down, handling requests, sort of a manual way, was a pain in the butt, frankly. Yeah. So, you know, first day at CloudBees, I heard about PSE and was sincerely excited. I, in my experience, this is what the market needs. I think it's going to be huge, mm-hmm. and they're not paying me to say that. So, well, technically, I think they are, but yeah. but not directly. So,
awesome. All right, so I think that sort of covers everything we wanted to cover today. It's really appreciate you guys taking your time to showing it off for Jenkins on Azure to mm-hmm. us, and you know, considerations for scaling it as well.
Yeah, well, thank you guys.
Great.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
So if people want to reach you, what's your Twitter handle?
Specifically?
You, yeah. The community concierge.
555.
So I can be reached by just Tyler at cloudbees.com. Mm-hmm. The Jenkins project can be reached on jenkinsci.org. We've got a lot of really good resources for getting started with the project. Mm-hmm. And that's not just using Jenkins, but also you know, hopefully contributing back to Jenkins to make it what it is. I'm fairly easy to find on the internet.
And you can find out more about CloudBees first before we get to me by going, speaking of paying bills, by going to cloudbees.com or emailing info@cloudbees.com. Mm-hmm. You can also follow and DM CloudBees on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I personally can be reached on Twitter at Brian V. Dawson, or B-R-I-A-V, I'm B-R-I-A-N-V-D-A-W-S-O-N.
In the description.
I don't know how to spell my name, but I can also be reached at bdawson@cloudbees.com.
Okay, awesome.
Cool. Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.